So now we are going to deal with one of the most beautiful picture rune stones of Scandinavia, and that is DR42, the Jelling picture rune stone, the larger one. And DR42 is the registration number of the stone. You have already seen when Anne-Sophie Græslund made her presentation earlier that each picture rune stone and rune stone in Scandinavia has its own registration number. The larger Jelling stone, or King Harald's Jelling stone, is very huge, and it is three-sided pyramidal. It is 2.43 meters high above ground level. It is 2.90 meters, 1.62 and 1.58 meters wide, and it is carved in hard gneiss. It is designed in the Mammen style, and it's dated to about 970, as Anne-Sophie Græslund said earlier today. King Harald was king of Denmark from about 958 until about 985-6. And as I said, it is executed in the Mammen style. The Mammen style, the Ringerike style, and the Erne style constitute late Viking Age art, dating from about 950 and into the second quarter of the 12th century in the world of the Vikings. Concerning design, late Viking Age art was Nordic design, and it has never been better. And it was Nordic design in continuous development. Concerning motifs, late Viking Age art shared the same store of motifs and motif constellation, which was predominantly Christian symbolism. Concerning pictorial structure, late Viking Age art was in accordance with the Christian pictorial structure, which is based on the principles of the hierarchic middle axis, and which echoes the very structure of Christianity. Christianity is, of course, a monotheistic religion, which places the one and only Sinang Fas and in the middle axis. Late Viking Age art was gradually replaced by the Romanesque art, but this transition presented only a rupture with respect to design. Late Viking Age art is, of course, Nordic design, and Romanesque art is European design. So there was no rupture between them with respect to motifs and pictorial structure. Late Viking Age art and the Romanesque art were in accordance with one another, and they pulled in the same direction and went the Christianity errand. Picture runestones form a very important part of late Viking Age art in parts of Denmark, in an area of Norway north of Oslo, and in large parts of Sweden, with a total of more than 2,000 stones. And Jelling is here, and the Frisjö stone, which you have seen once today, is there. Only few picture rune stones stand on their original site today, but one of the most important of them all, King Harald's picture rune stone, does actually. It stands right in the middle right in the middle of the center of the two mounds. So you can see it here. It is right there. When approaching the larger picture room stone in Jelling, one notices as the very first its three-sided pyramidal shape, which immediately evokes the idea of the Christian Trinity. At this time of mission, when everything was assigned to people, geometric symbols and symbolism of numbers played a major role in Christianity. The number of three is a sacred number, which in the Christian culture symbolizes the Trinity. The number of three is often used in the Bible. As we know, there are three holy magi. Christ stayed 3 days and night in the grave. Jonas was 3 days in the whale's belly, etc. And the number of three is visualized in, for instance, triangles, triquetre, three-lobed leaves, etc. And the three-lobed leaf is often being the end of, for instance, a lion's tail. The number of three perpetrates this elegant picture rune stone, which was definitely created on royal command. The runic inscription is carved directly in the stone, whereas the pictures are carved as low relief in the stone. And that is definitely very unusual for Scandinavian picture rune stones, because the material in this case here is gneiss, could also have been granite, and that is very, very hard material, so it has been very difficult to carve the picture in low relief, but it has been done. And there are also some unusual stylistic features, which you could have a little look at now. Detail as this is also very unusual, but found in other places of the Viking world. As stated, there are three faces of this fantastic picture rune stone, and concerning this stone, there is an intimate relationship between images and text on each side and the sides in between, which form a unique whole. The three faces of this stone are entitled respectively face A, we should read it from here, around the stone here, and then up to here. This is face A, or the inscription side, because it has most of the inscription. And then comes face B, the animal side, and face C, the Christ side. And the text and pictures must be read from face or side A to B and to face C, with face C as the absolute high status side of the stone. On face A, we start reading here. On face A, we read that King Harald ordered this memory made in memory of Gorm, his father, and Tyr, his mother, and that was that Harald who won for himself all of Denmark. And then the text continues here, and Norway, and it continues here, and made the Danes Christian. The designer of the layout of the stone has been genius. He managed at one and the same time to show something of the past, something of the present, and to point forward into the future. An example of something of the past is concerning the text. because the text on this picture rune stone is written in the Vikings Fusaq alphabet, but it is carved, the text is carved horizontally, and that is definitely very unusual. Normally, runes would be carved vertically, as is seen on the little picture rune stone standing next to this in Jelling, but here the text is carved in runes and they are placed horizontally, and that is extremely elegant because it is to pretend as if you are writing in Latin letters in a Christian illuminated manuscript. It's very elegant. The connection between the text and the image on face A is perfect. The text is, as you heard before, a memory of the king's dead parents, a memory of his royal family, and a memory of himself. And concerning the frame and image on, of side A, the image is this snake. You can see the eyes and the pointed head, and then it runs all over here and actually runs all around the stone. And of course, a serpent is an ambivalent symbol. It ranges from a good god to an evil devil, so it can only be understood out from the context. Among the oldest and most important symbolic values of the serpent are wisdom and eternal life. And that is very close to what it symbolizes on the Scandinavian picture rune stones. Because from now on, that is actually from the smaller Jelling stone and this one, from now on, the wise rune serpent will carry the messages of the picture rune stones to the following generations. The connection between text and image on face B is very perfect too. The text is a memory of King Harald's conquest of Norway, it says. And the picture and frame consist of a Romanesque arch, as we also see here. This arch here is a double rope twisted three times and three times building trequetra and pretzels. Twisted three times and three times trequetra and pretzels. And the part of the twisted rope, which is common to face B and C, is particularly interesting. It's this part here. It goes together with this part. And that is clearly to symbolize a seam between two pages of a Christian illuminated manuscript. It was actually an elderly gentleman working as a volunteer in the National Museum Copenhagen who found out that and wrote a little booklet about it, and we all agreed. The lower part of the frame of side B, here, 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 and here, is built by a contour of a warship with ram bows. And from now on, ships sail along on the picture rune stones. Anne-Sophie Græslund showed you one of the younger ones earlier. The eldest from this one is the contour of a warship and with ram bows, and then we get ships with mast and a cross as the top of the mast. Inside the frame here, we have a highly stylized lion seen in profile and equipped with a canthus top on his head, a canthus tongue, and a canthus tail ending in this three-lobed leaf. The acanthus leaf is the most frequent pars pro toto for the Christian tree of life in late Viking Age art and early medieval art. And the lion here bows reverently its head and lifts its left foreleg in adoration of Christ on face C. And there is also the serpent here. And the serpent is seen in a bird's eye view, peacefully bowing its head in adoration of Christ on face C, and winding its way around the lion in the shape of a cross. It is a static situation. The two animals are not fighting. They are standing quietly, and they are kept inside the frame. They do not have a high authority to go beyond the frame, as we will see later. The picture on side B looks like a heraldic image suggested as King Harald's arms by Fritz Lindahl of the National Museum many years ago. And this theory, of course, fits with the text about the king conquesting Norway, but of course it cannot be proved. And from now on, a lot of quadrupeds and serpents are seen on picture rune stones throughout late Viking Age art. And the connection between text and image on face C is also perfect, of course. The text is a memory of the Christianization of the Danes, that is why, as Anne-Sophie said earlier today, this stone is often referred to as Denmark's certificate of baptism. Frame and image of face C consist of, again, a twisted rope, double rope, three times twisted and three times building triquetra and pretzels. And inside the frame, we have the absolute high status picture or image of the stone Christ crucified in the tree of life, shown in a most beautiful and sophisticated manner. The image consists of two acanthus shawls. And Christ himself forming the cross, a circle and two triquetrae, one at each side of Christ's legs. The acanthus rolls and leaves keep Christ in the crucified position, and the acanthus leaf about Christ's head bent down and points him out as what it is all about. It's very elegant. Christ is a strong god of the time. It is the King Christ who does not die and who shows no sign of suffering. He has the cross halo. His hair is a twisted strong rope. He has open eyes. He has outstretched arms reaching beyond the frame, and that is, of course, very important. And he has spikes through his palms, which will surprise you, because it's always written that he hasn't, but I'll show you. But he has, there will come a picture scene later. And then he has his feet resting on a natural projection or shelf in the stone, and that is as if he is standing on subedanum, this support for his feet. And then the circle, the symbol of eternity, keeps the acanthus rolls and Christ together. DR42 phase C shows us an elegant visualization of the old legend about why the Christian tree of life and the cross of Christ are one and the same. The legend about that was well known and beloved in late Viking Age art and had for centuries earlier put its mark on art. But it was first written down in the beginning of the 13th century by Jacobus de Voisin in the Golden Legend. And what does this legend say? It says that when the old Adam was dying, he was very old, more than 900 years old, he sent his son Seth to the Garden of Eden to ask for a twig from the Tree of Life to comfort him in his last days. And Seth went on and he succeeded in getting a twig and hurried home, but when he came home, his father had already died. So Seth and Adam had been buried at Golgotha. So Seth planted the twig on his father's grave, and it became the twig grew up and became a very beautiful tree. So when King Solomon was building his temple, this tree was felled to become building material. But it would not fit in any way, and it would not fit in and could not be used. And then the legend tells that later on the Queen of Sheba dreamt that this tree, which was so difficult, it was a very, very dangerous thing because it would one day cause great harm and suffering to our Savior. So now it was a question of getting rid of it, and it was thrown into a creek and floated to shore because it was waiting for one specific person. That was, of course, the carpenter, the day the carpenter was looking for material to the cross of Christ. And now the tree would cooperate because it had reached its final destination. And there were more. I'll come back to that later. The cross is of course a symbol of Christ, and from this huge picture runestone, the cross became the most prevailing motif of picture runestones throughout late Viking Age art, but never reproduced in such an elaborated and elegant way as we see it now. Then you can see how it was built up by Acanthus Rolls, Christ, and then we ended with this one. And here, well, yes, I had the picture from a drawing where you can see that Christ has had spikes or nails in his hand. So after this magnificent picture on the larger Jellingstone, the subsequent crosses, they were more humble but often very beautiful. They are often arranged as logos in constellations with other motifs. It can be the acanthus put together with the cross and the circle and so on. And now I will show you a few examples of what that became like, because we have no picture runestones from the larger Jelling runestone with such a beautiful and elaborated picture as this picture with Christ, but there were lots of pictures following and telling exactly the same legend. And this one I have chosen to show you is the Swedish Landshammer stone from Södermanland. And here you see a very fine logo, which tells the same story as the beautiful image on the Jelling stone. And such a picture rune stone comes from the first half of the 11th century. And you can see it has the same recipe as the larger Jelling stone. It is the acanthus leaves, or it was acanthus rolls and leaves on Jelling, and then the cross, and kept together with the circle. And then you have the logo, very elegant logo for why the Christian tree of life and the cross of Christ are the same. This is in Ringerike style. And if we go a little further up in time, this is the Swedish Vik stone from Uppland. That is from the second half of the 11th century, and it is in Urne style. And you can see the beautiful cross here, lifted up and protected by the serpent. And if we make a drawing out of it, so we can see the recipe here, you have the leaves. Now they are designed in the Urne style, but the story is the same. The acanthus leaves, the cross, the circle, and then we have the story that I have been talking about. And then Anne-Sophie showed you also the Frisjö stone from Jämtland in Östersund, and it is very fascinating because this is the northernmost stone in Sweden. And this phenomenon with picture rune stones started in Jelling, and then it went up through Sweden and a little bit north of Oslo. And this is, so to speak, the northern part of the area with the Christian picture rune stones here. And you have the recipe again, fine acanthus leaves and a cross. Here is no circle, but you can change between that as which overtones you want to give the picture. And then you have the rune serpent here. And as Anne-Sophie told later this morning, the text says that Östman Gudfason had the bridge made, and he also made the Jämtlands, the people in Jämtland Christian. So it's two beautiful stones to have on the southern part of this area and in the northern part of this area. And then here is once again Husby Lyhundra Church, which Anne-Sophie also showed you. And here we has come to the end of the picture rune stones area. This is definitely the last time for the late Viking Age art. You can see these heads on, such a head on the rune serpent here, and on the little serpent there. They are clearly to be dated in the first in the beginning of the 12th century. And so this is definitely one of the youngest picture rune stones. Well, it must be from about, what, Anne-Sophie, 1125, yeah. About that. The reason why I want to take this as the last one is that you have heard earlier today in the text it says that secret lies here. So concerning the Scandinavian picture rune stones, we have walked from King Harald's Christian Memorial Stone in Jelling, and we have ended up here with a Christian tombstone where Sigrid has been buried. And then just before I finish, where did the inspiration to the Jelling stone come from? Yeah, concerning me and David Wilson has also written that earlier, but I have dealt with more things working after that. He said that he is completely right. We should look to the Isle of Man for the inspiration to the Yelling Picture Runestone, because on Isle of Man they have such a beautiful high cross as, for instance, Thorleif's cross here from Kirkbredon, and that is of course a Celtic high cross, but the material that is the soft schist from the Isle of Man, and this one, Thorleif's cross, is decorated in a very late Jelling style, very early Marmont style, so it is a little bit older than the Jelling stone in Denmark. And in the text, if you look at the text on the side here, it is carved directly in the stone. And that was also the case in Jelling. And look at the very fine ornamentation that is made in flat relief, which is common for the high crosses in the Isle of Man, but which is absolutely very, very difficult to put to a Scandinavian very hard stone. And then look at little details as this and this. That is very unusual. And I also showed you that we have that detail on the Jelling stone. So if we look at the text here, what does it say on such a stone as Thorleif's stone? It says that Thorleif Naki had this cross put up in memory of Fiak, his son, and then something more which has no interest right now. But that's very interesting, because a man called Thorleif Naki, he could only be a Viking from Scandinavia, but he is putting this mix of Celtic and Scandinavian inputs up in memory of Fiak, his son, and Fiak is definitely a Celtic man's name, so Fiak's mother has been a Celt. So the craftsman behind the larger Jelling stone is, as far as I can see it, he either came from the melting pot Isle of Man, or he was a Dane who had been sent over there to learn how to do things like that. Thank you.